Well, hello, and a very warm welcome back to the Andrew Eborn Show with me, Andrew Eborn. And it's that special time when we do the pair of briefs. I'm delighted to be joined yet again by Stephen Barrett. How are you, Stephen?
I'm very well, thank you, Andrew.
And what a happy new year. How did you spend it?
I think I went to bed about 20 past 11. So I was
Oh,
just
you
a
know how to
boring old.
party. It's got to be good. I've been loving the feedback to our little chats on a pair of briefs, and lots of people are raising questions and asking us to unpack them in this sort of user-friendly way, if you like. We're cutting through the jargon. There's a lot of things that get misunderstood in the press, and there's been a lot of talk about this sort of euphemistically called grooming gangs, when effectively they're sort of rape torture gangs, and who was responsible, who could do what, and so on and so forth. And I thought we should unpack the difference between civil liability and criminal liability. Talk us through that.
So, yes, I mean, that first point is one I am now very much persuaded on, and largely because of my readers. I used rape gang and grooming gang without much thought and got quite a lot of pushback when I used grooming gang. And I now understand why people feel that that is somehow downplaying the situation. So I just use rape gang now, and I note that that's what the Americans have started using, which is much more useful. If we all, it's actually with language, it is much more helpful if we all just use the same words. And quite a lot of the bad people in our society will deliberately change words just to sort of throw you off, to make you feel slightly uncomfortable. You know, you were comfortable with this phrase. Now the phrase has slightly changed. Does it mean the same thing? Do I still feel?
And
And it's really.
words are so important, aren't they? And it's a euphemism to say it's grooming, as opposed to you're hearing these horrendous reports that are coming out and the court transcripts which come out when we see the sentences and so on and so forth. I mean, they are absolutely horrendous, these crimes, and they should be called out accordingly.
Yes, and they are racially motivated. It's very, very clear from the evidence that we have that they were deliberately targeting people, these girls, based on race. They'd also targeted Sikh girls, which is a part of the story that still, I think, hasn't yet had its time. I think that will come. And in the coming weeks and months, I think we will return to that idea that they are specifically targeting groups and ethnicities and ethnos based upon, you know, the idea that they are weaker and that they are lesser, which is deeply racist thought. And we're clearly going to have to need to grow up and deal with all of this as a country. I don't think, thankfully, because of the intervention of Elon, I don't think it can be ignored anymore. I mean, as we talk, there's a vote on the House of Commons about the inquiry, which we're told Starmer has whipped against, which is just monstrous, because he's got his pet political pundits. Pippa Carrera is out tweeting as we speak, trying to desperately rewrite his history to make him the hero of the piece. Well, if he's the hero of the piece, then let's have the inquiry into it, and he can damn well look
absolutely.
heroic.
I always say that sunlight is the best disinfectant, and why anybody would ever say, well, don't ask those questions to see who knew what, when, why, and make sure it never happens again. Their argument is, and we always like to be fair and balanced so we can unpack it properly, their answer is that people don't want any more inquiries, they want action. What's your answer to that?
Well, that would be great too. And Ben Habib has called for a task force, and I think that would be a great idea. Let's do both. There's a idea that you can only do one thing. That government can just, we only have one lever. We can't do two things at once. It's
no,
too complicated.
I'm totally with you on that. I've yet to hear any convincing argument as to why you can't do both. Get on with sorting out the problem now. Work out, though, who knew what, why, and when. Because otherwise, if you keep people in the dark, they're only going to rise and so on and so forth. And as you know, Errol Musk is a regular on the Andrew Eborn Show, and I was talking to him about this, and he said, look, this is absolutely horrendous. And well done for Elon for shining a spotlight, because often it's the media that drive the narrative and this sort of stuff and say, look, let's focus in the same ways we had with the post office scandal, same ways we had with the infected blood and so on and so forth. But this is a stain, a moral stain on Britain, and we need to deal with it.
Yes, we do. And you asked me the difference between civil and criminal liabilities, and let's go there. So most people, if they remember the O.J. Simpson trial, will remember that he was found not guilty in a criminal trial, because that's held to a higher standard of evidence and proof. But then there was a second hearing in the civil courts where he was found to have carried out the act, and therefore he had to pay compensation. And that's really the big difference between the two. When you hear the line civil or the line criminal courts send you to prison, civil courts give you a bill. And that's a different type of liability. It's one that the government doesn't specifically control, but that doesn't mean the government can't do more to help. So I strongly suspect that many of the victims of the rape gangs will have some type of civil claim against somebody. A lot of them were in care. There's one story about a girl who was raped, who was then married to her rapist, and the social worker put them her fostered her to his parents. Right. I mean, obviously, it's not for me to comment on a specific case, but that looks like something that could be investigated. It looks to me that the social workers owed what we call a duty of care to that person. There will be other cases where they're in the care system, so the care home, and the care workers will owe duties of care to these people, and therefore they might be able to seek compensation. And that's through the civil courts because that duty of care has not been met. This is a tort, and it's what we call negligence. And it's right that all of the instances of negligence should be investigated in this matter. If I were in charge of the task force, what I'd do is I'd get a big law firm, probably somebody like Irwin Mitchell, who are absolute specialists in this. I'd go and chat to them and I'd say, please do no win, no fee for all these people. And I will send you all of these people. And the task force would send them everybody and they would review and process whether they had potentials for claims. And those who had potential for claims would move forward and hopefully would get compensation. And that is, I think, part of the civil justice system, which simply isn't being used at all. And I strongly suspect because if you grow up in care or you grow up abused in Oldham, let's say, then your first thought is not to go and talk to lawyers. And you probably worry about lawyers. And you probably worry that lawyers cost an awful lot of money because often we do. But remember, I talked about that thing, no win, no fee. And I think if ever there's been a time when a big law firm would take on a batch of people, no win, no fee. I mean, it'd be printing your own money in terms of free publicity for the law firm. So the moral argument aside, the economic argument it would be pretty obvious to my mind. And if any survivor is listening to this, then please gather together, form groups, and then go and talk to the
Well,
to these
and
law
that's
firms.
something which we can help with. I mean, we obviously know a number of firms. You mentioned Irwin Mitchell. There are lots of great firms, and I think those who are willing to do that would be absolutely right. Talk very briefly though, because there is that difference, obviously, between the criminal side and you talk about O.J. Simpson and the civil side, and the principal difference being the burden of proof, if you like. It's got to be beyond reasonable doubt, effectively, for the criminal cases, and on the balance of probabilities on civil cases. So a lower standard of proof. There is, however, a time limit. Talk to me about the time limit for civil cases.
So the basic time limit is 6 years. And that's a hurdle to anybody who had these things happen to them more than 6 years ago. I mean, again, if the government were competent and if I were in charge of the task force, I would pass a law changing that time limit for these cases because you can do that and there's no reason not to. And it may well be that if somebody were to ask the courts to extend the time limit, then the courts would come up with some brilliant reason to do so, but the far better one would be for government to take action and actually defend and protect the interests of these young people whose lives have no doubt been blighted by this terrible abuse.
Yeah,
But
and it's
yes,
also
that's
important to, and it's just in the same way as with personal injury cases and so on and so forth. So it's from that the time runs effectively from when you discover, isn't it? Talk to me a bit more about that, about when the time actually starts.
yeah, so it's 6 years from the date of it happening. But then one of the ways of extending it is that if it was hidden from you, then you can, from the date that you discover that you could actually do something, then there's a separate 3 year limit that starts running. And anybody in this situation needs to get professional advice. And it will depend very much on the specifics of their case. So we're not going to be able to advise them properly. But yeah, if they're conscious of these time limits, as I say, there might be ways around it, and you should always have a bit of a look at this. I just think the government should take blanket action. The
Yeah.
other thing that they can do is they can campaign for the government to set up a compensation scheme. So with the infected blood scandal, that is finally coming to a compensation scheme, although I mean that's just a debacle. It's an absolute joke. I mean, the post office scandal hasn't paid out half as much as it's supposed to. I mean, these government-run schemes are not run well, but that's not a reason to not try. You know, there was this awful argument by this odious Nazir Afzal, who was a prosecutor in the north. So I think he's probably got skin in the game if we were to investigate this. But you know, he again paints himself as the hero of the story, just to give his side of it. But there was this odious tweet he put out saying basically, inquiries never work, so why bother trying? And it's like, well, that's just awful. I mean, for a start, the lives of these human beings matters. They are beautiful, you know, human souls. This should never have happened to them. What's happened is, you're right, a moral stain, and they have every right to try. And just because we fail, if we failed 99 times before, it doesn't mean you don't try again on the 100th. It's just
Yeah,
it's a
and the
nonsense
backlash to
argument.
that particular comment, I mean, it's been immense. And as you say, it's all about our principal thing. We should look at the victims. And whilst we say money, I mean, money will never put them in the same position. That tends to be the thing in the civil cases. Can we put you back in the same position you would have been if the wrongdoing had not happened? That's the general sort of principle. But clearly, the money itself is just one aspect, and the damage, the horrendous damage done to the victims, should never be forgotten. But he was wrong to put that out. I mean, again, trying to put that into context, he was just saying, look, they haven't been very good in the past, but we should make sure they're good in the future, shouldn't we?
Yes, I mean that's the obvious counter to that point, and it was just a fatuous point. He just doesn't want an inquiry. Why is a very interesting question that an inquiry would hopefully answer.
Yeah. So going back to that sort of side, then we've got so they can talk about this class action, or they can try and approach directly. There is that the statute of limitation, generally 6 years, but there may be, as it comes out, about the duty of care. What as and this is why we need to shine a spotlight on it. Did people know something and they didn't do anything about it? And that sort of revelation may provide an extension, but we can look at that sort of side in further detail. Talk to me then about the liability of some of these councils, then, where they've got people in care, and talk to me about the potential liability for the councils and the individuals concerned.
Well, one of the things that I would want to look at if I was in charge of the task force is a crime. So again, popping over the line from civil back into criminal, called misconduct in a public office. And I would very seriously want to investigate everybody I could for that. Now, there's a line called what is a public office, and it's quite a well-defended line. So in the Court of Appeal recently, Mr. Justice or Lord Justice Leveson said that an ambulance paramedic is not a public, it doesn't hold a public office. So you have to have sort of some sort of standing. But we've found that magistrates and judges do. We've found that police officers do. We found that police community support officers do. Immigration officers, elected officials, MPs, councillors, civil servants, prison staff, army officers, bishops. And volunteers of the Independent Monitoring Board. So, you know, there's a load of people who could potentially be investigated for misconduct in their public office. And I would want that. I mean, again, I can't say anybody's guilty. That would be ridiculous, even if I even tried. So I'm not saying that anybody's guilty, but I would want those investigated. I would want all of the people who could potentially be investigated, which is all the councillors, all the council leaders, all the council staff, all the officers. I mean, there was a one case where a girl went to police officers, and it's alleged that she was told to go away and sober up, and then coming out of the police station, she was raped. I mean, that's just horrendous. So that, I want all those officers, you know, investigated. I want every single one of them, you know, to be up. All of them will have professional bodies and professional standards to which they're held. That can all be gone through. You know, we've got a massive regulatory system. We may as well turn the eye of the regulator onto this. This, as you say, is probably one of the biggest national scandals of my lifetime. And it, the idea that we can just brush it under the carpet because these are working class people in the north, it's just for the
No,
birds.
it's absolutely horrendous, and that's the other point, is that people got nothing to hide. There's two reasons we want to do it: is make sure that obviously that the correct facts come out, and the relevant people are called to account, but also to make sure it never happens again. We always come out with that sort of trite statement: well, lessons have been learned. Well, they clearly haven't. And we can only learn lessons if we work out what happened. But looking back at that sort of side, people always say about Keir Starmer, and they say that, well, he was head of the CPS at the time, Crown Prosecution Service. Tell me about the procedure when people are bringing evidence and deciding whether a case will go to court, and to what extent would cases have come across Keir Starmer's desk to basically make sure that the criticism, which everybody's leveling, a number of people are leveling at him, to say, well, he deliberately didn't follow these up, or he was negligent in not following them up. Is that a fair criticism? And let's look at the procedure that goes on within the CPS and what extent he may have had knowledge or not.
Well, it's his job. So he was head of the CPS for the relevant period of time. And I have tended to get piled on by, he has a fan base of lawyers who adore him. And they tend to cause a massive fuss if I, dare to suggest that he wasn't the greatest DPP that the world has ever known. Because as far as they're concerned, the sun shines out of his every fundament. But in all reality, this was his job. I got a massive pile on over the post office scandal, where I pointed out that the CPS brought prosecutions of sub postmasters, which is true. And we've just passed a pardon law for those sub-postmasters, and we had to put in a section of it, those who are prosecuted by the post office and those who are prosecuted by the CPS. We had to put that in to get them off. But nonetheless, a number of fanatical pro-Starmer lawyers sort of desperately piled on me to pretend that he wasn't involved in any way. And the CPS wasn't. It's just nonsense. It's just absolute tosh. And the fact is, we don't know the intricate day in, day out stuff about the CPS. I've never worked for them. So it's a perfectly legitimate criticism to say, well, Barrett doesn't specifically know that he definitely was, but he was in charge. And he, during the cake gate, he did keep saying that Boris was in charge and responsible for all the civil servants and everything that every civil servant was doing. There are hundreds of thousands of civil servants, and Boris is presumably liable for all of them. Well, mate, if Boris is liable for all the civil servants, you're liable for the CPS.
It's got to be right, doesn't it? And as I say, our mistress here is that we don't come with any political agenda. And we try to make sure that everybody's side is represented, and because that's only fair. And you turn on that sort of basis. But it has to be right, doesn't it, to say, look, this is the procedure. This is normally what happens. Whose decision was it not to follow it through? And if the general public have that information, then it gives Sir Keir a chance to sort of respond, because he's come out against Elon saying it's all about misrepresentation and lies. Well, what is the correct representation? What is the truth? That is our only mistress. Is that a fair summary?
I think that's very fair. And I worry that we're becoming an increasingly infantilized country. We're increasingly treated like children. And you're right, he has made this blanket statement that Elon is spreading misinformation without bothering to tell us what the actual information is. So he's just saying, I know what the information is, but you little people, you just don't worry your little heads. Well, this is not sustainable. I mean, we paid him a vast amount of money to run the CPS. We then gave him his own special pension. He's got his own pension by Act of Parliament, which is pretty generous by any regard. And we gave him a knighthood. So he's had quite a lot of trappings for this task. And then to simply turn around and say, well, I didn't really do it. And there are too many questions now. When it started, I don't know if you remember that there was a massive backlash against Boris, who suggested that Keir Starmer hadn't been terribly good about Jimmy Savile. And the immediate, and it should have been a warning flag, actually. And in future, maybe we should take these as warning flags. The more they scream, the more they may well have something to hide. Because there was a huge backlash against that, the suggestion that Boris was somehow deeply immoral for suggesting that he hadn't done his job terribly well, which, I mean, it doesn't even make any sense with hindsight. But at the time, it seemed to have some sort of cogent basis to it. But every time there's been a scandal involving the CPS, it's always the same defence. It didn't cross my desk. It wasn't near me. I didn't do it. It's like, well, then what were you bloody well doing? We do this is and when we grow up as a society, we go back and we will return to questions like this. We will have the confidence to say to people, well, look, I'm paying you a vast amount of money. What are you doing? You're my employee. Justify your time. And I think they want us to act like children because children don't ask questions and aren't a pain and but I'm afraid in a grown-up democracy, we all have to be pains in the
Oh,
proverbial.
and
We have to.
absolutely. I mean, we will continue holding people's feet to the fire. But let's assume for a moment, and I say you need evidence and so on and so forth, we need to get to the facts. But let's assume that he didn't do his job properly. We've been talking about liability. What potential liability could Sir Keir Starmer have?
Well, I mean, that would be very serious. We'd need to look at disciplining him in some way. Now, because of the nature of his job, a lot of this is all sewn up. So he thinks it's all unpickable, but it's not unpickable. We'll just use Parliament to do it. And you can use Parliament to punish him. Now, it's very unlikely the Parliament he controls is going to do that. But I don't think it's a terrible mystery, Andrew, but I don't think he's going to control Parliament for terribly much longer. So once he's gone, I think we will be looking into things. And in team, you're right to focus on fairness because there's another politician, another PM I didn't really terribly like, which was Rishi Sunak. And actually, in Rishi's defense, he did set up task forces to at least begin to look at this. I mean, nobody has taken this as seriously as it warranted at all. And no, nobody gets to sit there and go, I'm, absolutely covered in virtue because of these rape scandals. But at least he did at least start these task forces. And I was quite skeptical when somebody said this to me. And so I went away and I looked at them and I was like, oh, okay, he did actually do probably the bare minimum that anybody could have done, but it was at least a start. But we are going to need to take this much more seriously, and we're going to need to look into the Prime Minister as DPP. Very difficult to investigate his failures as DPP whilst he is Prime Minister, but I don't think he'll be Prime Minister much longer.
Yeah, as I say, Errol was telling me, and he's been all over the news today. He's going to come on the show again today, a little bit later, unpacking it. But he's saying he's going to be out by February, is his thing, just on that sort of thing, where the general public are rising up against that. And we're going to speak a bit more about the threats and suggestions of election interference and so on and so forth. We'll come on to that. But I want to just focus again on these crimes and some of the reasons why they may not have had the public scrutiny, and people have been very worried about this sort of two-tier justice system and suggestions, because it is a certain demographic, if you like, who are guilty of these rape torture gangs. Talk to me about that and the reluctance that there may have been, I say may because we've got to hear both sides, may have been to actually fully shine a spotlight on it.
Well, I find that deeply sinister, Andrew, because, let me put my cards absolutely on the table. I've got Muslim Pakistani friends. And I've mentored so many Muslim Pakistani kids into, I don't know if people know this, but I tend to help them get into good universities, and give them advice on law and getting jobs in law and all the rest of it. The idea that they are somehow with the rapists is horrific. So actually, I really hate this at its base premise, because at its base premise, it's like, oh, they're all in this together. And it's like, no, they're not. I mean, that is just awful. It's a ridiculous suggestion. So it feels as though the authorities, if they were going down this path, it's almost racist in its own right. It was a racist premise. That if you're from Pakistan and a Muslim, you would approve of this. What? That's a horrendous thing to suggest. Obviously, all of my friends are deeply horrified by this. There's a guy who was our local mayor who fusses over my child, and he saves pictures of videos of his cat for when we bump into each other, so that he can show the videos of his cat being funny. I mean, he's a lovely, lovely man, and the idea that he's somehow with these awful human beings, I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. And I wish there was more visibility. I strongly suspect they are deliberately not giving visibility to the members of the Muslim Pakistani community who are horrified by this. Because I think if the mainstream media wanted to, they could go and find a huge bunch of Pakistani Muslims who would say,
Yeah.
this is outrageous, this is disgusting, we're really
And
horrendous,
that
we're
and
horrified
that's
by this.
always been my point when discussing it on more platforms than Paddington, whenever I sort of turn around and say, look, just because there are certain people who are fit a certain demographic doesn't mean everybody in that demographic is part of them. But what I would suggest, and I'd be interested in your views on this, is that the leaders, the prominent figures within the Muslim Pakistani community should be the first to come out and condemn it.
They should. I do wonder if they've been given the option. I'm not entirely sure whether that is what the mainstream media is going around doing. I haven't seen a lot of them vox popped. I haven't seen a lot of it done. As a community, they tend to, I mean, let's just be absolutely honest, they don't always have the best English, and there isn't always the most sort of savvy approach. So query question whether they're able to, but I think ultimately they should be reached out to because the general public need to see that normal, ordinary, decent, hardworking British Pakistani Muslims are not on the side of these evil. This is a tiny group of genuinely evil people. If they do come from one community more than another, then that needs to be found out why. So that's we can't turn our back on this. I'm not hiding it. But the idea that therefore everybody connected with the community backs this is just equally horrendous. It's as bad. It's just bad.
No, you're absolutely right. And again, I think that should happen. But I would recommend, and we've seen lots of these atrocities with people driving cars into Christmas markets and so on and so forth. The first people who should come out and condemn it are people from that particular community or demographic, because that way the public won't just label everybody with the same terrible the label on that sort of premise. But the other thing we have to avoid, Stephen, as well, isn't it? That anybody who raises this as an issue, you're always called a racist or an anti-Semite or whatever it is to turn around on that space. We've got to get rid of the labels, don't we?
It's not been helpful in this case, and this fear of community cohesion has not benefited us at all. It's again, I see it as twisted in its own on its own rational basis because we're one community, we're Britain, and the community is harmed by this because this is, as you put it, a deep moral stain. And I am equally harmed as a British person by the mass gang rape of little white girls as I am by the mass gang rape of little Sikh girls. This doesn't one of them doesn't harm me more than the other one. They're both horrendous. And we must get to the bottom of what has gone on. We must treat us all as one community. Stop all this nonsense. I mean, which bloody community am I in anyway? I know I can't keep track. I'm in the bisexual community, Andrew. I'll stay there, shall I? Because it seems to only be me. So just be me. I'll be all on my own in a nice little community. One of the few openly bisexual males in the country. But, this nonsense about communities is nonsense. We are Britain. We are one community and we need to come together. And when crimes happen, and actually, Andrew, this is a point I've been wanting to make for a very long time, is that over the last 20 years, we've increasingly talked about the victims of crime. And that's just the wrong way to see it. You know, and I know that every single criminal case is the king against. It used to be the queen against, but now it's the king against. The king against this individual. And it's what the king and queen are doing when they're named in that way is they're saying, this is against all of us. You hurt all of us by doing this. It's not the victim versus the perpetrator. It's the king against the perpetrator. Because when you commit a crime, yes, there is a victim. Of course, there is, and often maybe there isn't always, but often there's a victim. But the real, harm, societal harm, is to all of us collectively. Every time there is a murder, we are all harmed. Every time there's a stabbing, it's not just the guy who gets stabbed who's harmed. It's societal cohesion. It's the sense of safety and security in the realm. And the king and queen do it because it's their peace. This is the idea that we all live under the grace of their peace, the king's peace, and that a perpetrator has harmed the king's peace. And this is this, we need to go back to this thinking. Get it, stop thinking about victims. Go right back to thinking that we're all in this together. So when little white girls are gang raped, we are all collectively outraged and harmed, and society is hurt. When little Sikh girls are gang raped, I don't go, well, I'm not a Sikh, therefore it doesn't matter to me. That, no, we are all harmed. We are all in this together. And I'd like to see much more of that and return to that. And I've not seen, to be honest, a politician of any persuasion who's talked in that type of language. But I mean, just to be very honest, I mean, that would stir my soul. I mean, I'd like to see the return to that so that
Yeah,
we stop
and you're
being these
absolutely right.
practices
And
of
I
cohesion.
always make the point that justice is blind. And we're working on that sort of principle. You're turning around and saying it's irrelevant. And as you say, it's a crime against all of us. And we need to bring back society where we call it out. Because people always say, well, whose fault is it? Well, it's partly, unless people are calling it out themselves. And this is why they're introducing this new law about the obligations on people. Talk to me very briefly. I know it's in its initial stages, but talk to me very briefly about this new law imposing obligations on people to call things out.
I think it will end very badly. And I worry that what we're at the moment is a stage of real rule breakdown. So one of the ways that you tell this is that odd things start to happen. I don't know if you remember a few months ago, perhaps a year ago, an inmate refused to come up from the cells and appear in the dock. And you got very allegedly learned lefty lawyers who went on the media and said, well, the judge has no power to do this. And it's just, I was sat there screaming at the television and screaming at the radio. Of course, the judge has the power to order the defendants into the dock. What they meant is that there's no specific rule saying judges shall have the power to phone and deliver. But that's not how our legal system works. You don't need everything spelt out. And what they're trying to do is to find specific, to make everything a specific crime. In which case, Andrew, what you'll end up with is a massive pile of rules that nobody knows. And what we need is to have far fewer rules that everybody knows. Society will be much better off if you had 10 rules everybody knew than if you have 1,000 rules nobody knows.
Oh,
It's just.
absolutely. And again, it's a point we often make. And it's not just knowing the rules, it's also making sure that they are enforced, isn't it?
Yes, it is, but you can only enforce them if you know them. And that's it. That's again is the point. So I'll tell you one of the more interesting ones that keeps cropping up with me is that the police have the power to arrest people who block the highway. But if you try and complain to them, so you find a car parked on, because people are, ever since the pandemic, I think the general behavior of people has gone downhill. And I think we should have a talk about this, and everybody should maybe try and behave a little bit better. I mean, right from people playing videos on trains, and just basic manners seems to have gone out the window. But one of the more obnoxious things around here, at least, is that people will park fully on the pavement, particularly if there's double yellow lines, because they wrongly believe that that means that they're not liable for parking on double yellow lines, which is not true, by the way, Andrew. That is not true. But again, somebody was talking about how we need a specific law against that, and it's like, oh, Barrett just bangs his head on his desk again. But anyway, the police have the power to move that vehicle because it's a crime to block the highway. But you try and tell the police this, and the first thing they'll do is say, no, you have to talk to the council, it's a civil matter. When we talked about civil and criminal, and they just don't know what their own powers are half the time. I mean, genuinely, half the problems with enforcement are that the College of Policing is signed up to this ideology of identity politics and maintaining community cohesion, which once doesn't stand up to any intellectual scrutiny. But surprise, surprise, Andrew, the College of Policing is not staffed by the most intellectual people on the planet. It was never going to be. But the other one is that people just often don't know that they've got powers. And it's really quite frustrating to be a lawyer in that scenario because they'll just straightforward to your face, go, we can't do it. And it's just like, yes, you can. I remember my cat was dying and I got into a spat with a vet about GDPR. And I really, because my cat was dying, I really lost my temper. And thankfully, the vet did back down. But what was most telling when I lost my temper was that it wasn't the threat that I was a barrister, it wasn't the threat of any other job title I had. The threat that actually got the receptionist to back down and talk to the vet was journalist. And that it was absolutely remarkable to me. It's because you sort of accrue all these titles throughout life. And I worked terribly hard to become a barrister. From the age of 12, I desperately wanted it. And I thought, everybody will listen to me because I'm a barrister. And it's like, nope, the one that actually worked was journalist. That's what cut through. That's what
Oh
people
no,
are
people are
scared
so scared of the media. That's why I always say I'm a barrister, broadcaster, and
of.
futurist. So I can predict what's going to happen to you. No, people are scared of the media. And as I say, the media has been really powerful in recent years for righting wrongs, such as the blood scandal, the post office scandal. The fact it took an ITV series to expose the post office scandal and bring that basically to fruition, even though it's still dragging on, it says a lot. The fact that Elon is shining a spotlight on these rape gangs, it's again sort of shows that we need to take this incredibly seriously. We need to look at this as a society where we all have an obligation to call it out and also to ensure that there is that enforcement. But I think you're right, just to in defense, if you like, of the police, is that somebody needs to make it very clear to them, this is what you do in this situation. You have the power to do this. You should do it, and justice is blind.
Yes. And part of the problem with that is the introduction of things like police and crime commissioners, which I am universally opposed to. So it doesn't matter whether the police and crime commissioner is a Conservative or a Labour or Lib Dem or whatever. I think they're all just a bad idea. why on earth have we got this sort of shadowy layer of politician involved in policing? I mean, I just don't like this at all. The Home Secretary, they should all the police chiefs should answer directly to the Home Secretary, because the Home Secretary is somebody that, through the press, we can get sacked if need be. So if we end up with a really awful Home Secretary, I mean, I'm not saying the current one's good, but you know, if we ended up with an awful Home Secretary, then we'd get them sacked through the press. That's our constitutional mechanism for doing it. And instead, that sort of accountability, if you like, has been fractured and put in all sorts of different places, largely hidden because most people don't know who their police and crime commissioner is for a start. So the first fault of police and crime commissioners is that most people don't actually know who the hell they are, and that's constitutionally a problem. Secondly, how on earth do you hold a police and crime commissioner accountable? You know, the local press might care about the story for a couple of days. National press is very unlikely to care about, you know, a police and crime commissioner being at fault. And even if they are, there'll be another one over there who's just equally at fault, and another one over there. And how do they cover them all? And, you know, what's the process for getting rid of them all? And does anybody, you know, they tend the elections for a police and crime commissioner, and I tend to think that this is an admission that they don't work. But they tend to be around the same time as a general election or a local council election, which is basically admitting if we had a special election for police and crime commissioner, no one would turn up, which I think is pretty damning for
Yeah,
them. And I.
it's so sad when apathy is often the winner in those sort of elections. And I would absolutely urge everybody to get involved. I mean, that's the key message, isn't it? Look, it's been a pleasure as always unpacking this. We will be back with a pair of briefs. And if there's any particular issue you'd like us to discuss here, do get in touch at Andrew Eborn at Octopus TV, and I'll pass it on to Stephen as well. Do subscribe to his Substack, and I've got one as well, and subscribe to this YouTube. It's very easy, and some of it's free, and you can get added benefits as well if you become a member and get your subscription. So do check into that. But for now, Stephen, thank you very much for joining me.